voting on ledger technology.
Okay, thank you very much. So I'm pleased to have the opportunity to introduce our project on DLTs to you. So this is one of the projects that was funded under the Applications of Distributed Ledger Technologies program about voting on ledger technology. So I'll go into an overview of the project and then a bit about the Surrey element of this. So it's a joint project with King's, and there were several aspects to it. The bit I'm going to focus on is the bit involved verifiable online elections, really for organisations. So we don't think this is ready for prime time political elections yet, but for organisations that do online balloting, and Electoral Reform Services are the kind of leading provider of that in the UK. So they are kind of industrial partner using the distributed ledger technology to underpin the verifiability. So I'll explain a bit about online voting, what the issues are, what verifiability is about, and how it all fits together. So you know, the kind of needs that you have for these organisations, you want vote secrecy, or kind of the idea is it should be a secret ballot. But you want confidence and assurance in the result that comes out at the end of the election. So requirements on electronic voting systems generally, there are actually many, many requirements that you can come up with. The key ones are, you know, the secret ballot. The free and fair ballot relies on vote secrecy. This isn't always a requirement in electronic voting. For example, in Parliament, the ballot is not secret. You could see how every MP voted, and that's much easier to get assurance in the result, because you can see it, you have the entire election open. But generally, you're interested in maintaining the secrecy of the vote itself, but you want the result to be correct, to reflect all the votes that were cast. That is always obviously the key requirement. But then there are other aspects that you would want. So you'd want properties like coercion resistance, which means it's difficult or resistant to other agents coercing you to vote in particular ways against your will. So you want mechanisms in place that prevent that from happening. And then, you know, so you worry about security, you may worry, well, how do you get the integrity? You'd like to perhaps have some way of verifying or auditing what's happened. So auditing the election in order to have confidence in the result. So where might e-voting be used? Well, I mean, there is always discussion around political and statutory ballots, and you can bet with the general election there'll be more discussion around why are we not doing electronic voting yet. Surely that would make things easier. Where it is actually used in practice, so shareholders, industrial action ballots is an interesting one. There's discussion at the moment about whether balloting for industrial action can go electronic. So there was a consultation, and there's recommendations that's sitting on a minister's desk at the moment around this, that eventually the government or the next government will come back with some kind of response. So at the moment you can't do balloting for industrial action electronically, and you know, that's an issue. There's push for that. Professional societies, building societies, and so on. So there are many places which are obviously lower risk or lower consequence than political elections, where maybe the risk is more manageable or acceptable. There's a number of benefits that are proposed for electronic voting. So convenience, accessibility for particular groups, particularly those that need some kind of electronics in order to interact with systems, so to construct their votes. Perhaps with complex voting ballots, it will help to reduce accidental invalid votes, so spoilt ballots, so where you have to, for example, give preferences, people often get that wrong, or one X in, or two X's in a column and one in another one. So often there's a number of invalid votes that are considered to be accidental. And you know, remote voters, so not having to go out on a cold December day and cast your vote and so on. And managing complexity and the dynamics of election, for example, voting rights, we have these. There are other arguments that are made that I don't think are valid in the same way. So it's claimed that it would reduce costs. It's not clear that that's true at all. If anything, particularly at the beginning, it would probably increase costs. increases turnout, but studies generally haven't shown that. So it's that people that are engaged with the process will vote anyway, might find it easier, but it's the jury's out on whether it increases turnout. Some people just say, well, we ought to get 21st century, and we do everything else online. I'll come back to that one, this argument that, well, we bank online, so why shouldn't we vote online? So what's the problem with electronic voting? So this is how you might visualize such a system. So people have their devices and they cast their vote, they send it to the server at the center, and a result comes out at the end. So that's kind of conceptually at the simplest level. So trust in the integrity of this election is critical. So how do we know that this result is correct? And more particularly, how can we persuade others that the result is correct? How can we persuade the loser that the result is correct in particular? So the problem, of course, is, you know, cybersecurity around this. You might have malware or bugs on either voter devices or the election servers, and they might accidentally or deliberately tamper with the vote. So you may get glitches. And you may have adversaries or insiders, part of the election authorities, interfering with votes, either in transit or more generally on the server, or malware, or getting into the devices. And in particular, attacks at scale like this are much easier than for physical paper-based systems. If you want to interfere with 10,000 votes on a paper-base, that's a much bigger operation, whereas you can imagine this can be done quite easily and remotely. And the reality, for particularly for political elections, you know, the reality is there are powerful and well-resourced, you know, hostile state actors that are interested in interfering with elections, and possibly with industrial action, for example, to influence the result of those kind of ballots. So we hear, well, we bank online, so why don't we vote online? So there are key differences between online banking and online voting. So if we did do online banking, like we do online voting, then you wouldn't have any receipts or records of the transactions, because the transaction is supposed to be secret, even from the election system itself. So it would be like the transaction being secret from the bank, but the bank still needs to manage your account. You wouldn't get bank statements. You might just ask the bank every so often, how much have I got in my account? Can I spend this? You would pay the cost of any fraud in your account, because it would be hard to detect. You wouldn't have any way of detecting that. And also, you know, there is one election authority. There's no way to change your bank if you don't trust it. If you don't have confidence that they can do this correctly, you don't have any way to change it. You can't say, I'm going to cast my vote using this different election authority in this general election. So if you look at it from the converse point of view, well, we don't vote online, so you turn the question around. So why would we bank online? Well, there are trust mechanisms for banking online. There are verifiability, auditability, liability on the bank for when things go wrong. You don't have those kind of things when you have online voting. It's not clear where. And the financial institutions do, you know, there is fraud that goes on, and they accept that as the cost of doing business. Obviously, they try and minimize it, but they recognize that it goes on, and it's tolerable. There isn't really an equivalent for elections and for ballots in terms of tolerating what happens if things go wrong. So that's the kind of key difference between banking online and voting online. So the idea would be, well, if you can put in some of those verifiability mechanisms, then you have a way of you have a way of actually being able to verify the election, verify the vote. So in the electronic voting systems literature, secure electronic voting, there's this concept of end-to-end verifiability. It's been around for a long time. Talking of old technologies, end-to-end verifiability as an idea has been around for decades. You have the idea that individual verifiability, that as a voter I can verify that the vote the system has really is the vote that I cast. There's universal verifiability, that all the votes the system has do correspond to the tally, the result that's come out of the end. So you have these combinations of verifiability that let you verify various aspects of the chain from casting your vote through to the result coming out of the end. And there are ways of doing this that keep the vote secret. So you need an independent and trusted tamper-proof election record. So you need some kind of record that everyone can accept that this is the record of the election. And that's where the DLT comes in. So the Volt project objectives were to use DLT to put end-to-end verifiability into practice. So how can DLT be used to underpin this? So as I say, we've been working with the Electoral Reform Services to include verifiability in online voting systems. So they have online voting systems. At the moment, you have to trust the Electoral Reform Services. So you commission them to run your election, and they run your election and they tell you the result, and they will monitor things, but there's no verifiability. So the project had an initial prototype system back in April based on the Selene design, and we've now trialed it. We had two kind of smoke tests, two pilot votes, but we've had two real elections now. The second one just finished last week, with paying customers of theirs that are doing an online vote, and we're looking at the verifiability mechanism on top of that. So one of those elections with the Royal College of Nurses, and the other one is the College of Podiatrists, kind of electing representatives for them. So those are elections that can now be verified, and we're kind of seeing how the voters actually understand this and how they get on with that. So the system that we, it's called Verify My Vote, so VMV, the project demonstrator. So this has been laid at the moment on top of the ERS standard system. So you'll get some credentials, either by email or in the post. You will go to their system and log in, vote in the normal way, but you know, by radio buttons. And what now happens, or with our system, after polling is closed, the voter will receive information on how to open a commitment to check their vote. Okay, so there's a commitment to some piece of information. It's a tracker number that the voter will be able to open afterwards and do the individual verifiability. So they can confirm the correctness. Sorry? They will have private keys that are used to open the commitment.
But the system gives them, so the system must have that private key. So the system can access the vote.
The prototype that we have at the moment, we are managing their private keys. But yes, well, ultimately you would want them to generate. Yeah, this is one of the kind of usability challenges. You'd want them to have an app that's generating the private key, and then nobody other than them has their private key. And
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, at the moment, to test the usability, we're doing that for them because we're not going to ask them to do that. But yeah. But there are two parts of the system. So there's the Surrey part, and we're managing the private keys part, and there's the ERS who are managing the election. So even the ERS don't have the keys, can't open the votes. So obviously cryptography, I'm not going to go into that here because there's not enough time. We're talking at a higher level, but there's cryptographic mechanisms that provide the verifiability through these commitments while preserving ballot secrecy. And all the verifiability evidence is posted on the ledger. Okay, so the votes coming out at the end are all posted on the ledger. Only the individual voter knows which one theirs is because only they have their tracker number. So it can be independently checked. Anyone can check the overall tally. And individuals can check their own vote. So the design of the system rests on cryptographic commitments. You need to make a commitment to each voter to a particular tracker number at the beginning of the election. And the reason for that is if you only give a tracker number at the end and say this is your vote, if 10 of you have voted for Alice and I want to steal votes for Alice, I can give all 10 of you the same tracker number. You'll all go in and say, yep, that's my vote. And you will think you've done the individual verifiability. So the way to prevent that is by having cryptographic commitments, so that before I know how you're voting, I have to give each of you a tracker number. I can't give you the same ones because I'll get caught out if you vote differently. So the current status, I've mentioned this. So we've got the design of VMV for layering it on top of the ERS system. This is based on a system that came out of Peter Ryan and his group in Luxembourg called Selene, which ideally you wouldn't be using their system at all underneath. You would just use the Selene system. But the reality is they're not going to run trials with real paying customers on something that's just coming out of a university. So they want to run their election and be able to recover it if something doesn't work from our point of view. But But we've done user testing with them, and as I say, we've now had voter trials, and we're collecting the feedback. So after the voters do their verification, they're invited to participate in a questionnaire and give us, answer our questions about their understanding of verifiability and whether they like it, whether they like the idea of checking their checking that their vote is correct and so on. Because we also need to understand whether people will do this. You need enough people to do this in practice to be able to verify. So this is what it looks like on the web. So we have, here's the public bulletin board. So you have the commitments, and it's all various cryptographic commitments here. So there's a tracker commitment. There's an encrypted tracker number that's going into a mix and so on, so that nobody knows which tracker number is associated with which voter, and so on. And then at the end, so this was the trial. This was the first test that we did, where you voted for your favourite chocolate bar. You would at the end go through and check, and it would give you, here is your tracker number, and then here is your vote. So the top bit is, here is your vote, and this was a vote for a Twix. And then below that, you've got, here's the tracker number that only you are able to decrypt and obtain. So that's what we're doing at the moment through the web. So that's the verification. And then the other part is, you get a complete list of votes that you can download and examine in here an Excel spreadsheet and so on. And you can find, yeah, here is the tracker number that corresponds to what I've just checked myself, and here it is in the list of all the votes that have been checked. So then anyone can go through this and work out the tally, can do their own adding up and see what all the votes have been, and therefore who the winner of the election is. So that's the universal verifiability. So the distributed ledger is a crucial component in VMV. So voting literature talks about web bulletin boards, and most verifiable voting systems have something called a web bulletin board, which is this append-only database. It's where you add information, and it can't be tampered with once it's been added. But it turned out when we actually came to kind of build this sort of thing, that people didn't know how to build this. You didn't see where it would come from, or who you should trust. So DLT does solve a real problem in verifiable voting in terms of giving you this distributed ledger, being able to make trusted commitments. So you make these commitments at the beginning. They won't be tampered with. So somebody at the end can't say, well, you've just made up those tracker numbers afterwards, after the event, because they were there at the beginning. I'm being wound up here. So the other aspect that DLT gives you is consensus. Everybody knows that they're all seeing the same view of the election. So I know when I look and see my vote counted that actually everyone else is seeing the same view. So it's also been able to do the verifiability. So this is where DLT helps. The information is going onto the DLT. And so there's the summary. There are many outstanding issues. I mean, the project was just to build a demonstrator and to start looking at what goes on here. Of course, you've got issues around, well, how do you get voters to understand what the DLT is giving them? So, you know, they're still just looking at how can they inspect the DLT. So maybe you need verifiability tools, which at the moment are not there, and they can be provided, and other issues. So I'll stop there, I think, and thank you very much. They can't. So the question is, if they can see their vote after the fact, then they can change it.
Oh, no, I just mean if you're seeing it, if they then go back in to verify it afterwards to check that it's registered the correct vote for them.
Yeah.
Is that not opening an opportunity for them to say, well, I didn't actually like the result of that election?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. I mean, yeah. So one of the other challenges around this is how dispute resolution. So if you come along and you say that, but nobody else has, then there are issues about, well, how do you tell whether that really was what you cast, or whether you had malware, or whether you're cheating, or whether the system is cheating. But that's still an open question.
Question at the back first, and then here.
Yeah.
If a voter can publicly approve how they voted, I can coerce them into voting for me by saying, show me your vote, and if it's not for me, I'll beat you up, and if it is for me, I'll give you 5 votes.
Yep, so the Selene system has a coercion resistant mechanism. So when you get, so you've got the commitment to a particular tracker number, but you can actually, if you have your, it's using your key, if you can, you can use your private key to turn that into a commitment to a different tracker number. Yes. Absolutely. So you know, as long as you remember, you know which one is the vote that you really cast. So you know your real tracker number. Only you know whether you generated a fake commitment that opens to another tracker number. Information.
So information, how do I know that all the entries there are made by only the people that should be voting?
Okay, yeah, so that's an issue around the kind of list of voters in the first place. So their credentials, so a vote that comes in has to be signed. So there will be the signature keys for valid voters will also be part of the system. And when your vote is sent in, it's an encryption, but it's signed. And then the signatures are taken off before it goes through being processed.
Who runs the mix?
Sorry?
Who runs the mix?
There will be a, we're running it through Verificatum, so there'll be a number of,
okay.
of nodes.
Yeah, I guess my question was mostly like, how do you actually commitment, but I guess you send them through the mixnet. Right? So there's a mixnet that is implemented.
There's a
mixnet. There has to be some way that these decommitments, like, you know, find
yeah.
their way. This has to be through the mixnet, and you're authorized.
Yes.
Authenticated to go through the mixnet. Okay, so I think this covers the only little remark I had when you were saying about banking and voting. I think another point that is worth to be heard here is like when you have a security breach in banking, usually you can quantify this with a certain amount of money, for example,
yeah.
or lost. And in voting, it's unclear if you have a security breach, how can you exactly?
How do you quantify? Yeah, with the quantify with a different government. Is where it corresponds to.